Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are staring into the abyss of a problem that sounds like science fiction.
Right.
But it's actually playing out right now in hospital wards, in insurance back offices, and HR departments.
It really is.
We're looking at the fundamental clash between two things we all value, but which might actually be enemies: staying alive and being free to actually live.
It's a tension that's existed for, well, as long as humans have formed societies. It's the classic Hobbesian bargain security versus liberty.
Exactly.
But artificial intelligence has taken this old philosophical debate and just turned it into an engineering problem.
Yeah.
We were talking about the clash between optimizing for biological persistence, literally just keeping the machine running, and optimizing for autonomy.
And the premise here is, well, it's kind of terrifying in its simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
We know AI is exceptional at processing mountains of data. It can find patterns in a heartbeat or driving record that no human could ever spot.
The scale is just unbelievable.
But the catch, and it's a massive one, is that the AI doesn't have a moral compass. It doesn't know what it should be optimizing for unless we tell it.
Exactly. The machine is agnostic. It deals in probabilities, vectors, and thresholds, not values.
It doesn't know what dignity feels like.
Not at all. So the mission for this deep dive is to examine how we attempt to translate these abstract human values, specifically autonomy and freedom, into rigid algorithmic code.
How do you code liberty into a heart monitor?
Right.
And to do this, we're looking at two specific case studies from the source material today: a cardiac monitoring system called Cardizio, and the rising world of dynamic behavioral insurance.
And I think the question we need to plant in your mind right now is this: does a longer life always equal a freer life?
A very good question.
Because the technology we are about to discuss suggests that those two goals might actually be mutually exclusive.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the heart. Case study number one: the heartbeat and the algorithm. Now, before reading this, I always thought a heartbeat was just thump, thump. Simple, mechanical. Why do we need AI for that?
That's the Hollywood version, isn't it?
Yeah,
thump, thump.
Yeah.
In reality, the human heart is a symphony of biological data. You have four chambers working in sequence. You have the depolarization of the ventricles, the repolarization, the relative strength of each contraction, the time intervals between compartments.
It's an electrical storm contained in flesh.
That's a great way to put it.
And the source material highlights a specific tool, Cardizio. It uses something called vector cardiography.
Right. This is fascinating. Instead of just looking at the rhythm in a flat line, it looks at the electrical propagation through the heart in three-dimensional space.
It maps the vectors of the electricity.
It does. And the source describes a scenario where a patient undergoes just a 10-minute recording session.
And 10 minutes of recording produces astronomical amounts of numerical data.
You'd be drowning in paper if you printed it out on a standard EKG strip.
This is the data problem the sources mention. If you show a human doctor a single heartbeat strip, they can analyze it,
of course.
But if you give them 10 minutes of data, thousands of beats, and ask them to compare the microvariations of the third chamber's interval against 10,000 other patients' histories, the human brain just shuts down.
It's cognitive overload. A doctor physically cannot see the longitudinal patterns, those tiny, subtle drifts in data over time that signal a problem before it happens.
But this is exactly where AI thrives.
It's built for this. It filters through that mountain of numbers, finds the trajectory, and says, hey, based on patient X from 5 years ago who had similar microvariations, here is your future risk.
Which sounds great. I mean, who doesn't want to know if they're about to have a heart attack?
On the surface, it's perfect.
But here's where it gets really interesting, where the trouble starts. Once you have a tool that can predict risk with that level of granularity, you have to decide how to tune it.
Yes.
What is the definition of success for this machine?
This is the core dilemma. The source material calls this the medical view. Doctors, by nature, and I say this with immense respect, are professional pessimists regarding health.
Their default setting is biological longevity.
It has to be.
So to a doctor or a machine programmed by a doctor, success is the total absence of pathology.
Correct. If the machine detects any risk, even a blip, the protocol is immediate intervention.
Right.
Treatment, drugs, lifestyle changes, cut the cholesterol, hit the treadmill, stop the stress. They are optimizing for survival.
Which brings us to the beer and pizza argument. I honestly love this part of the research because it feels so relatable.
It's a vital philosophical counterpoint.
It really is, because a purely medical definition of success views beer and pizza as failures. They are toxins.
They're risk factors.
But a human definition of success, the good life, might view beer and pizza as essential components of joy.
And that is the conflict. If the AI is tuned strictly for medical success, optimizing for zero risk, it effectively consigns you to a life of worry and restriction.
So you're stripping away the freedom to enjoy existence.
In exchange for the maintenance of the biological machinery.
So you're alive, technically. Your heart is beating efficiently. But are you living?
You're functioning. Mm-hmm. But are you free? This brings us to the problem of thresholds. This was the most technical part of the deep dive, but also, I think, the most important.
Absolutely.
How do we translate this desire for autonomy into code?
Because you can't just tell a computer, let me live a little. You have to give it a number.
Correct. And we have to acknowledge a baseline risk.
Right.
Everyone at every moment has a non-zero risk of dropping dead.
Right.
Let's hypothetically say your baseline risk of a cardiac event this year is 10%.
Okay, 10%. I can live with that. Now, let's say I want that slice of pepperoni pizza. And the algorithm calculates that living a little, eating that pizza, skipping the gym, raises my risk from 10% to 11%.
A 1% increase.
Should the machine flag it?
That is the million-dollar question. A doctor might say, yes, flag it. That's an increase in mortality risk.
Of
course. But an autonomy-focused model might say, no, that 1% is the cost of doing business for a happy life.
But where is the line? 15%, 20%. If the machine screams at me for every 1% increase, I'm just going to get alarm fatigue and turn it off.
Well, there is a paradox here. The sources call it the dead or free paradox.
Right.
If the risk is 90%, virtually everyone agrees intervention is necessary. Because you can't be free if you're dead.
You can't enjoy the pizza if you're in the ground.
Exactly. Survival is a prerequisite for autonomy. But the difficulty lies in that gray zone.
That middle ground.
That middle ground between preserving life and detracting from the freedom to live it. The algorithm struggles here because quality of life isn't a variable it can measure.
It can measure heart rate variability, but it can't measure the satisfaction of a Friday night dinner.
Not a chance. And this gets even more complicated when you introduce age as a variable.
Oh, I found this part fascinating, how the correct threshold changes depending on where you are in life.
Well, consider a younger patient, say, 25 years old. They have decades of potential life ahead of them.
So you could argue they warrant a lower threshold for risk.
You could, because they have more years to lose. A small risk now could compound into a disaster later. The machine should probably be strict with them.
Versus an older patient?
Who might have fewer years left. Let's say you're 85. You might be less willing to sacrifice current pleasure, the beer, the pizza, the relaxation, for marginal future gains.
Right.
If you're 85, do you want to spend your remaining time strictly adhering to a diet to gain an extra 6 months of misery? Or do you want to enjoy the time you have?
It's the quality versus quantity debate, but digitized. And the sources mentioned they tried to solve this with a user interface change. Originally, the tool was just red or green.
Right. Red meant go to the doctor, you are in danger. Green meant go live, you are safe.
Very binary.
But life isn't binary, so they introduced yellow.
The yellow zone was an attempt to hand agency back to the patient. It signifies increased risk, but not immediate danger.
It's basically saying, hey, just so you know,
you're trending up. Do what you will with that information. But does that actually solve the math problem, or does it just make me anxious?
It doesn't solve the math problem at all. It just shifts the responsibility.
Right.
Someone still has to decide the exact percentage that triggers the yellow flag. Is it a 1% increase, a 5% increase? Mm. The math doesn't care about your feelings, but your feelings about freedom depend entirely on the math.
It feels like a cop-out. It's the machine saying, I'm not going to tell you to stop, but I'm going to make you feel guilty about continuing.
And frankly, handing a patient a yellow light often just creates panic. They don't know if they should go to the ER or just skip dessert.
It's data without context.
Which is the opposite of wisdom. So we're stuck with a tool that is brilliant at diagnosis.
Yeah.
But clumsy at philosophy.
Precisely. Now let's take this tension, this clash between safety and freedom, and move it from inside the body to the outside world.
Okay.
Case study 2, dynamic insurance. And the concept of the chilling effect.
This is something many of us are already seeing. And if you haven't, you will soon. Dynamic insurance is where your premium rates fluctuate based on real-time behavior.
We see this with those little dongles you plug into your car, right? The snapshot devices.
Exactly. It monitors acceleration, braking, speed. If you drive like a grandma, you save money. If you drive like a race car driver, you pay more.
But now imagine that logic applied to your physical body and your lifestyle. Hmm. The source paints this vivid picture of a skier. I want you to imagine this. You're at the top of a mountain. It's freezing. The air is crisp. And you're looking down a double black diamond run.
It's difficult. It's dangerous. And it's going to be a blast.
You are about to exercise your autonomy to take a risk for the sake of adrenaline and joy. You have the skill and you have the desire.
And just as you point your skis downhill,
your phone goes ding, ding.
That is the sound of the algorithmic overlord.
It's a notification. We see you are about to attempt a high-risk activity. Your health insurance premium is adjusting upward accordingly.
Talk about a buzzkill.
It is a buzzkill, but isn't it also fair? I mean, why should the insurance company pay for my broken leg if I choose to do something stupid?
That's the logical trap. Historically, we buy insurance specifically to mitigate the cost of risk-taking.
Oh.
I buy health insurance so that if I break my leg skiing, I won't go bankrupt. I buy it to enable the risky behavior.
Oh, I see. By buying the insurance, I'm buying a safety net so I can live freely.
Right.
But here, the AI is acting to prevent the risk-taking entirely. It's flipping the product on its head.
Exactly. It creates a conflict between two types of freedom. The source distinguishes these as structural freedom and operational freedom. This is a key distinction.
Okay, let's break those down. Structural freedom.
Structural freedom is the choice you made to buy the policy or install the app. You exercise your autonomy to save money.
You said, I want lower rates, so I will accept this monitoring.
That is a free choice. Nobody forced you to sign the contract.
Okay, so I signed the contract. That's structural freedom. I have exercised my right to enter an agreement. What is operational freedom?
That is your freedom in the moment of action. Standing at the top of that ski slope, when the phone goes ding, it limits your desire. It chills your choice.
Yeah.
You might technically still be free to ski down. The app isn't physically stopping you. There's no force field. But the financial penalty acts as a psychological barrier.
So by exercising your economic freedom, choosing the cheap plan, you have cannibalized your behavioral liberty.
You have trapped yourself. The tool that was supposed to serve you by saving you money is now defining you. It is shaping your behavior to minimize risk to the insurer under the guise of safety.
And the source material calls this a hyper nudge.
It is. It's not just a suggestion. It's a penalty that reshapes your lived reality.
And the scary thing is, the insurance company defines risk. Maybe skiing is risky. But what if they decide that eating red meat is risky? Or staying up past 11 p.m.?
That is the slippery slope.
Yeah.
If the algorithm's goal is minimize payout, then any behavior that isn't sitting quietly in a safe room is a deviation.
The algorithm views your life as a series of liabilities.
Liabilities to be managed, not experiences to be had.
And this isn't just about skiing or pizza. This expansion and contraction of choice seems to be happening everywhere. The source brought up the job market and LinkedIn as another arena for this.
This is the broader implication. If we step back, AI offers a massive expansion of choice. You log on to LinkedIn, you can apply for jobs in Australia, New Zealand, Milan.
Opportunities that were invisible 10 years ago are now on your screen. So massive structural freedom.
Yes, I can apply anywhere. The world is my oyster. But simultaneously, AI restricts choice through filtering.
And this is where we see the bias against what the sword calls slow thinkers. The philosopher example. I found this really poignant.
Right. Imagine a candidate who is a philosopher. They are brilliant, capable of deep, complex thought. But because of that, they might be slow in a rapid-fire assessment context.
They spend too much time thinking before they answer.
Which, in a boardroom crisis, might be exactly what you need.
The most valuable trait you can have. Someone who doesn't just react, but actually thinks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if the AI is optimizing for efficiency or speed of decision-making, which are common corporate metrics, the philosopher gets filtered out before a human ever sees their resume.
The algorithm interprets pause as incompetence.
So the AI gives us global options with one hand, but chips away at our autonomy with the other by enforcing a very specific, rigid definition of what a good candidate looks like.
It homogenizes us.
Exactly. Just like the heart monitor wants to homogenize us into perfectly healthy biological units, the job market algorithm wants to homogenize us into efficient, fast-acting corporate units. The outlier.
The person who drinks beer, skis dangerous slopes, and thinks slowly.
Viewed as an error to be corrected.
It feels like we are gradually being nudged into a padded room. It's a very safe room. We'll live a long time in there.
But it's still a padded room. That is the ultimate trade-off. We are moving from a world where we use tools to a world where tools measure us.
From tools that serve our ends to tools that define our ends.
Based on their optimization parameters.
Yep.
The conflict is between health and freedom, safety and spontaneity.
And I think what scares me the most is that it's all happening so quietly. It's just a new terms of service update. It's just a new feature on my watch.
It's convenient. And convenience is the ultimate Trojan horse for loss of autonomy. We trade freedom for ease or for a slightly longer life expectancy.
But we have to ask if the trade is worth it.
We do.
This has been a heavy one, but a necessary one. As we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with the final question posed by the source material, because it really stuck with me.
It is the dilemma we all have to answer for ourselves.
If an AI can guarantee you a longer life by minimizing your risky choices, but the cost is a life stripped of the beer and pizza moments that bring you joy, have you been saved or have you been trapped? At what precise percentage of risk does your freedom become less valuable than your survival?
That is a question the algorithm cannot answer. Only you can.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.